Hello, everybody. It might be hello again. We are in the midst of some technical issues, but we think we found a way. So, good morning and welcome to Turning Towards Life. This is Lizzie and Justin. We are here on a Sunday in October 2021 and really glad to be here in amongst the technical kerfuffles of getting here with this beautiful sauce that Justin's bought this week. And each week we gather and enter into this live and unrehearsed, clearly unrehearsed conversation. And we wonder where it's going to be leading us. And so, Justin, I want to appreciate this week as well. This, when you posted this source, I've been sitting with it ever since, and it's had this really beautiful effect on me. And so I'm kind of grateful in this moment for the practice that we have, posting it a couple of days beforehand, so we have a little bit of time to let it mull inside and see what happens, and we have a little bit of the source being in the world experience with us in our lives before we come to the conversation. So thank you for bringing this source, and I think it's worth saying as well that you can email us if you want to. You can email Justin and I, Lizzie at turningtowards.life or Justin at turningtowards.life, and you can find all of the sources and all of the conversations that we have at turning www.turningtowards.life if you want to. And so, Justin, just to say thank you again for the source, and let's see what happens today.
Thanks, Lizzie. Good morning, everyone. So some of you, this may be the second time you've been with us. We had an unsuccessful attempt to get this conversation going about 20 minutes ago, Lizzie, with internet troubles, and here we are back. And I'm just really appreciating that we can do this, that we can be improvisational together. And welcome, everybody. I just want to add to what you said about emails and websites, Lizzie, that we've now got a weekly update by email, which you can sign up for also at turningtowards.life, where we'll send out the source and links to the recordings, the video, and the audio every week. So if you prefer to get us via your email inbox that way, just go to turningtowards.life and sign up, and we'll be glad. There'll be another whole channel of communication with people, Lizzie. So I'm really glad that that's starting. So here's this source. So these are, as you know, Lizzie, these are the lyrics to a song. It's been quite a fun thing to do to bring lyrics as sources into Turning Towards Life. It's going to be hard for me to read these without singing them, but I'm not going to sing them. I'm going to read them for the words that they are. And they're the lyrics to an extraordinary song by the equally extraordinary May Erlewine, who's really worth her work, I think, is really worth checking out. And it's a song that speaks to something that's Lizzie been very powerful for me to also to discover and to remember, to do my best to remember. It's called Never One Thing. I'm the underbelly, I am the claw, never one thing, no, not one thing at all. I'm a street fighter, I'm a prayer for peace, I'm a holy roller, I'm a honeybee. I am the truth, I am a lie, I am the ground, I am the sky, I am the silence, I am the call. Never one thing, no, not one thing at all. I am hope, I am defeat, I am broken, I am complete. I am the grace, I am the fall. Never one thing, no, not one thing at all. I am the beggar, I am the queen, I am the end, I am the means. I am the hammer, I am the wall. Never one thing, no, not one thing at all. I am a victor, I am the loss. I am a profit, I am the cost. I am the salve, I am the sting. Never know, never know, never one thing. I'm a mother, I am the child. I am the meek, I am the wild. I am the witch, I am the saint. I am alive, never one thing. I am the lion, I am the swan. I am the bull, I am the fawn. I am a woman, I am the ring. I am my own, never one thing. I'm the underbelly, I am the claw. Never one thing, no, not one thing at all. I'm a street fighter, I'm a prayer for peace. I'm a holy roller, I'm a honeybee.
I'm the underbelly. I am the claw. Never one thing. No, not one thing at all. I'm a street fighter. I'm a prayer for peace. I'm a holy roller. I'm a honeybee. I am the truth. I'm a lie. I am the ground. I am the sky. I am the silence. I am the call. Never one thing. No, not one thing at all. I am hope. I am defeat. I am broken. I am complete. I am the grace. I am the fall. Never one thing. No, not one thing at all. I am the beggar. I am the queen. I am the end. I am the means. I am the hammer. I am the wall. Never one thing. No, not one thing at all. I'm a victor. I am the loss. I'm a prophet. I am the cost. I am the salve. I am the sting. Never, no, never, no, never one thing. I'm a mother. I am the child. I am the meek. I am the wild. I'm the witch. I am the saint. I am alive. Never one thing. I am the lion. I am the swan. I am the bull. I am the fawn. I am a woman. I am the ring. I am my own. Never one thing. I am the underbelly. I am the claw. Never one thing. No, not one thing at all. I'm a street fighter. I'm a prayer for peace. I'm a holy roller. I'm a honeybee.
Thank you, Lizzie, for reading that. So, something completely unexpected happened for me when I was reading, which for me, I had no idea that this was going to happen. And for me, it's very much to do with the something that this piece is bringing, which is I could feel on certain words, parts of me waking up. I could feel every word felt so different. And I noticed that when I read some of those words, when I read I am a, and there are some of them where I could feel it touched something really deep inside me, which I want to say is the best language I have for describing what that experience is that it touched a part of me that was longing to be seen. And sometimes what I felt was joy, and sometimes what I felt was grief, and sometimes what I felt was longing. And the place where this happened, as I read, where it reached me and which showed me that this was what was happening, Lizzie, was when I read, I am the meek, I am the wild. And it was on the word wild. And actually, May Erlewine has a song called Wild that has been very important to me over recent years. And I think what's going on is the reason why I wanted to bring this, which is, it seems to me that one of the big mistakes I make, particularly when I'm in difficulty or when I'm feeling really, really insistent about something, is to imagine that I am actually only one thing. I'm whatever it is that I'm taking myself to be. And I've got a whole lot of stories about what I am. A few sort of, what's the word? Like familiar descriptions of myself that I come back to, some of which I've cultivated, like I'm reliable or I'm thoughtful or I'm caring or something. Some of which were also ones that were given to me by other people that I took on. And some of them are ones, I suppose, that I've developed, like when I'm feeling very, very afraid, where I feel it's very easy for me to feel powerless and what's the word, like qualityless, like I haven't got any resources to draw on. And then I come to these words, and it opens up the possibility that I might just mostly have misunderstood myself, in the sense of maybe if I've understood parts of me quite well, but that, like all of us, we're these huge families or constellations of qualities and parts, all bubbling and moving and expressing themselves through us, but we don't always know. And so when the word comes, so here's what happened for me just before. I'm a mother, I'm the child, I'm the meek, I am the wild, and I can feel the wild part of me, which is a part that mostly in my life I've gone, no, not that part, not that part, that's the part to keep away. I can feel how much that part, the wildness, longs for someone to say to it and to me, yes, you are wild.
Mm.
What a relief it is to honour that there are many, many parts of me that fall outside of the identity that I tend to be cultivating, the identity that I tend to put my attention to.
Mm.
Last thing to say is, I think this is really important for all of us because I think we're so much bigger than we know. And I think it's the nature of being a human that we've been encouraged by the people around us and by ourselves and by our culture to only pay attention to some parts of us.
Mm. Gosh, I'm noticing how relaxing it is to be encountering this multitudinousness, as in everything right next to each other feeling. And I really hear you on the kind of on the naming of the things that are slightly out of sight, and what a relief that is. And I'm experiencing the relief and the kind of relaxation of being recognized for lots of things at once. So for me, I'm a street fighter and I'm a prayer for peace. Like, both of those things are true. And the fact that they're said to me at the same time, it's like in this moment, I'm not only seen for my street fighterness, but I'm seen for also my prayer for peaceness in one moment. And as I've been sitting with this, Justin, in the last couple of days, I've been noticing. So the gift of this for me is the noticing of how narrow my perception gets, just habitually. And because this has been with me, I've been looking at the people who I'm with and kind of naming the multitudes I can on just silently on the inside in my mind. And it's really helping to relax the kind of finiteness that I seem to be able to cultivate about people and about myself. And so to have this there in my contemplation, in just the ordinariness of going about my life, is really, 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 really freeing. Both freeing for me, because I don't really enjoy being very narrow. My nervous system doesn't feel expanded in that. I don't feel relaxed. I don't feel like I can expand into reality, whatever reality's got for me today. And with this, my nervous system has felt wide. Like, in order to say all of this about someone, I have to be looking in places that I'm not used to looking. Maybe it's not looking in places, but not looking in a way I'm not used to be looking. So when I look at you, I'm looking really with breadth rather than with narrowness. And as I've been practicing with this, I've found I can say so many things about one person at once, many of them contradictory. So I think the contradiction of this, the simultaneous contradiction, is really powerful, because I am and you are the meek and the wild, the hammer and the wall. Like, I'm the perpetrator and the victim. I can feel the brokenness and the completeness. It's like, I don't know, but it feels like we've all been kind of trained to make conclusions. And this is like anti-conclusive to me. It just undoes all my conclusions that I have. It's like nothing is done, nothing is fixed, nothing is the way that I think it is on its own. It's that and 100,000 other things. And each time I step into the 100,000 other things to practice, somehow everything softens and I don't feel, it's like I don't feel insulted by the thing I'm judging to be what it is that's insulting me. It feels like I can encounter something rather than, and hold it, rather than be kind of hurt by it or something. That's what's been happening for me, and feel really grateful for that. And even like going to sleep at night, I'm like, okay, so what are the conclusions I've come to? And what if I bring this in? Like, oh yes, it's also that, and it's also that, and it's also that. It's a really beautiful thing.
I love this way of talking about it, Lizzie, about that we've been trained to come to conclusions. And it is striking me that that is a very strong pull of our culture, is to be conclusive, to be anything but. We say that the opposite of being conclusive is to be uncertain, or to not know, or to somehow be deficient in some way. And I was thinking, as you were talking, the part of the trouble is that there are things for which it is very useful to be conclusive. You know, is it safe to get in this very, very deep water, which is very, very cold? It's an issue for me because I do cold water swimming. Like, sometimes it's really useful to know the answer to that question. I will be in danger if I do this, and I won't. So it's a necessary skill, but it's an error to apply it to people, because it, what it does is it understands us. Part of the trouble is understanding ourselves as if we were the same kind of thing as things.
Yeah.
You know, my watch here on the desk, it either works or it doesn't. Like, if it's working, that's great. And if it's not working, it probably needs fixing, but it's a thing and it's not a human. And it's of the nature of being a human that we are many, that we are bursting with a sort of multiplicity of not only qualities. It's not only that I can be both meek and wild, that's true, but it's also, I think, really true to say that because we are made up of communities of parts of us that bring all kinds of gifts, so we are ever shifting. Like any something that I've taken you to be, go, Lizzie, or she's, whatever adjective I would apply to you, may be true for that moment, and it may be true for a part of you, and it may often be true because you might be someone who keeps on bringing that part forward, but it doesn't for a moment mean that all the other parts of you are missing. It might just be that we're not looking. And we often get into this question about culture here. Lizzie, I was thinking that the other thing that came up was the whole system that we live in of grading people. Grading, you know, exam grades, and I've also worked in enough organizations where people got grades for their performance. You know, you suddenly become a one or a five or something. And of course, you're not an exam grade and you're not a one or a five. You're this, all of us are this extraordinary, ever unfolding, ever developing process of becoming that being a human is. And that, even just using that language, I think would sound very strange in lots of places, but it seems most true to me that, and that's the wonder of these words, is that we are those. And it, you said, it was really moving to me, that you've been noticing in the light of these words the kind of attention you can pay to people, that if you really let yourself look, you'll see far beyond the sort of immediate judgment or conclusion you have about them, to find there's so much there. And I was wondering, as you were speaking, also how we also do that with ourselves, how we let ourselves encounter the possibility that at any moment that we take ourselves to be something, it can be true, but it also leaves so much out, and what it might be to let the ones of us, the parts of us, the aspects of us that don't so often get expression, how to let them into the world so that we can know ourselves as meek, wild, witch, saint, lion, swan, bull, yeah, fawn, underbelly, claw.
Yeah. I'm having a thought, and I'm not even sure I can articulate it properly, so you might have to help me. But there's something arising for me about the implicit relationship to wholeness that arises when we consider ourselves as these various parts. It's like, if I'm consider myself only one thing, wholeness doesn't really get a look in. Like, the fact that I am already complete is kind of, we don't even go there. But if there's many, many, many parts, there has to be something bigger than the parts. So the fact that we're naming the multitudinousness means that there's probably a space between each of the parts, or there's, if there's a collection of something, there's also all of it as well. So I'm finding myself really invited into, not explicitly into wholeness, but implicitly into wholeness by considering myself and you and everyone as this multitudinousness. The fact that these parts are here tells us that there's something also that's holding those parts together. So there's a wholeness that's implied through the meek and the witch and the saint and the wild, and if those are all arising, they're arising out of something. And that's a really different conversation about what a human being is than this norm thing, this cultural norm thing of, well, are you left or are you right? Are you a Catholic or are you another religion? Like what are, like the kind of, it feels to me like not necessarily an undoing of labels, but a kind of loosening of it, so that even if I am labeling myself something, it doesn't mean that that's all I am. There's like 100,000 other things to me too. So it feels inclusive of much more of what's true, and a kind of anti-reductionist. So we're not trying to reduce all the time. And maybe there's times, as you say, to reduce. Like if you have to make a decision whether to go left or right, that's a really good time to use our reductionistness, because you just got, you know, you got to go one way or the other when you're in the car. But that's not appropriate for complexity, for magic, for mystery, for things that we don't know how to really get a hold of. And it gets me thinking as to, well, if I could include that complexity and that multitudinousness before I become reductionist, then my reductionistness is a different, my choices probably will be different. If I manage to include more and more and be informed more and more before I decide to do something, the nature of my decisions is going to be different.
I love this language of inclusiveness, Lizzie. That what this opens up is the possibility that we might include more of ourselves and include more of others. And that a lot of the trouble that we get into, it's not just the sort of practical trouble, I think it's the troubles with dignity and with taking care of one another and with seeing one another fully and seeing ourselves fully, is when we're not being inclusive. And I mean that on the biggest scale. Of course, there's a very important conversation about who gets included and excluded in our culture and what we might do about that to act on it. It seems to me that the place for us to start is actually right here, is with this one, and is with this one, with you, like right now, when we're together. Can we practice inclusiveness, inclusivity with what of ourselves we would ordinarily dishonor by leaving out?
Mm-hmm.
And like you say, that suggests also that, as well as the victor, the loss, the profit, the cost, all of these ones of us, that there's also this capacity that we have, the something that isn't any of the parts, that you might call the person, or you might call the self, or you could give all kinds of words for this, which is that of us which is inherently inclusive. It's what enables us to learn anything, so that there's something of us that isn't tied into, well, I'm only this, and so I could never possibly encounter this. And it's occurring to me that it's not only a possibility for us, but it could be a sort of commitment that any of us could take up, which is to recognize that not only are we many and other people are many, many aspects, many, but that we have this inherent loving, curious, wondering, welcoming, including capacity as humans. That if we were to let ourselves soften this pull to having a conclusion about ourselves and inclusion about other people, one of the gifts would be, first of all, that we would discover, like I keep on discovering my wildness. That's why it touched me so deeply. having lived in a body that wasn't very wild for most of my life, I learned to leave that part aside. There's the sort of dignity for our own discovery, but there's also trusting the sort of faithfulness we can have, that actually we are able to include much, much more than we often imagine we are. And that means that we've got the opportunity to not turn away, to come back to the overarching title of this whole conversation that we're turning towards, that we actually have much more capacity than I think we often realize to turn towards that of ourselves that we would push away, and turn towards that of other people that we would normally push away. And so when you're different to the way I'm sort of trying to get you to be, or imagining you should be, maybe instead of getting afraid, I could recognize that there's part of me that's afraid, but then I could also recognize that there's something way, way, way bigger of me that can welcome both my own fear, you know, what's Lizzie up to, but can also welcome the something of you that's showing up. And then our freedom, mutual freedom to be in relationship, and our dignity and our care for one another deepens because we keep on including.
Justin, I'm really moved by your, you said that this wholeness, this person, this self, is the thing that's necessary to learn anything. So to have contact with wholeness and contact with the self that is essentially our wholeness is necessary for us to learn anything. So to for us to cultivate the relationship that we have with our essential goodness, our essential givenness, our life force itself, liberates us into be able to learn. And it seems to me that human beings thrive on learning. Like we all, when something new is brought into our awareness, it's like I'm watching, Vesper, who's two at the moment with me, when something new happens. She said, "Well done" to me earlier, and she was so pleased that she'd mastered "well done." And I can feel her kind of almost stepping into new worlds because of the language that she's acquiring and the meaning of it. And so, and/or she learns to do something with a toy or something that she hadn't done before, like put something inside of something. And so, I'm really close at the moment with the real gift of learning. And remembering that I'm the mother and I'm the child at the same time. And that piece of me that loves learning something new, and actually it's very present here with you, Justin. Every week we're here, I can feel my, oh, I didn't see that before, and now I'm seeing it. And all the things that we do together in the kind of coaching space, it feels like a really profound and important encounter with learning. And of course, what's necessary in order for all of that to happen, which I'm seeing from what you just said, is that this contact with this, with self and essence and being, my being, is the thing that I have to have contact with if I'm going to be open to anything. Because if I'm fixed in my conclusions and my reductionistness about me and myself and what everybody else is and what I am, it makes learning really, really, really hard. So to loosen that and to kind of keep widening with this practice of parts, of all of these parts being present, feels like an amazing kind of training for me to keep committing to that loosens everything off so that I can learn and become what's possible.
Well, I'm left, Lizzie, at this point where we're coming towards the end of our time with the this word that you've used so many times in these many, many, many weeks and months of conversation, where, as you say, something new keeps on emerging and erupting into our conversation, which is the importance of a kind of faithfulness. But maybe the reason that we get very narrow is because is when we're not learning to trust, we find ourselves not yet trusting faithfully our own capacity to include. And maybe that's what makes the whole inclusion conversation not just like in me and between us, but on the wider scale, maybe that's what makes it so hard, is we're so afraid of ourselves and afraid of one another and what might happen.
Yeah.
But if we could know that we are, just looking back at May Erlewine's words, if we could know that we're the beggar, the queen, the end and the means, the hammer and the wall, the victor and the loss, the profit and the cost, if we could know that, and also to know that we are all of those and yet also something beyond all of those. We're not just some rowdy cacophony of different competing parts. There's something really, really trustable that we are, really safe making, really inclusive that we inherently are. What a difference that might make to the moment to moment living of our own lives and our ability to meet one another without having to try and control one another or make one another a particular way.
Yeah. Thank you, Justin.
Yeah, thank you, Lizzie.
So freeing the conversation.
So we're at that time and we've had spent half an hour together. We made it through to the end with no technical interruption this time. So feeling very proud and very pleased with us. And I just want to say thank you everyone for being with us. A reminder that we'll be here next week. A reminder that you can find us on podcasts, you can find us on YouTube, you can find us in our Facebook group where this comes out live and you can chat away with us. You can email us, Lizzie or Justin at turningtowards.life. You can sign up to our weekly email sharing of the source and of the recordings, and we'll be so pleased to be with you again another week. And I guess for now it's goodbye from both of us.
Bye everyone.
Bye everyone.